adjust your radio dial. You are tuned in to the Mark Order Podcast. Join the Mark Order.
It's Wednesday night. I would have kept going.
I know
what that means. I would have, like, if you played that for 5 minutes, I would have had no choice. I would just gas myself out.
Good to know going forward.
Yeah, I'd just pass out right on stream. You'd do the show alone.
Well, honestly, we could clip it. We'd make a lot of money.
It's true. It's true. But it is Wednesday night, which means it is the Mark Order Podcast. No Joe, me and Ryan today. I'm here 2 entire weeks in a row, which is a world record for anybody on this podcast in the past 2 weeks. So I'm the workhorse of this shit. I'm Kate. I'm here with Ryan. Hi, Ryan.
I hate that you get to call yourself the workhorse, especially because I'm not going to be here next week. And that just makes this worse.
Where are you going to be? Or is it not for public consumption to know?
Dog sitting. So.
Those rascal dogs.
Those rascal flats. Oh, wait, what?
Oh my gosh, those dogs are a country band. So there you go. We've got AEW Dynamite to talk about. Joe was here last week. We said only nice things about Ryan. We talked all about that episode. I hadn't gotten a chance to talk about the pay-per-view, so we recapped that a little bit. But now we are on the road to Forbidden Door, Ryan. It's so forbidden.
What makes it forbidden?
I don't know. You'll have to ask New Japan and AEW, really, because it seems like now people are just it's a breezeway at this point. Like, people are really just walking in and out. There's hybrid contracts, man. That doesn't seem forbidden at all.
Yeah, it seems like there's a sign saying enter.
Yeah, it's like green light is on the whole nine yards, but it's such a fun thing. I do think we talked about this a little bit last week, but I will reiterate, like, doing it at, like, right on the heels of the G1 is probably not a good move, just because, like, we already saw what happened with Gabe Kidd. He's missing all of the G1. I don't know if he'll be back for Forbidden Door. Like, Takeshita's over there in the G1 right now. it's such an extensive workload for people that are actually in the G1, that, like, to then go and build programs to a pay-per-view where the expectations are very high because you're back in England again is a lot. But it's also like, what other window do you even do it in? But yeah, we got that. We got All Out coming up. We had a pretty decent Dynamite today, Ryan. What did you think of what we got, kind of from an overall perspective?
I really enjoyed it. It was a weird layout, but overall a lot of fun. I think they
weird layout in the sense of the venue or the episode.
The episode. I love the venue. I love when they do small venues.
I do too.
I understand, like, at some point you think, oh, maybe you should go to a little bit bigger ones just to, but small ones always look cooler, and I'm here for the look, not so much the.
It's not my money.
So what do I care?
You're here for the looks.
Yeah.
You're here to see what venue was serving the most, which I love.
Again, it's not my money, so.
It is not your money, unfortunately. It's a shame. If you owned it, I would be in a different position in my life than I am now, I feel like. I feel confident saying that.
I can accept it.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. What else is going on, Ryan? How are we doing? You had family in town. You're living your best life. We were talking very briefly before we got on here. It's too fucking hot, Ryan. It's disgusting out.
It's not even that it's disgusting out. It's that level of hot where your house gets hot, and that's no good.
There's very little that air conditioning can do about it. But my poor dog, anytime I've gone to walk her, she just looked at me like, are you fucking kidding me with this? But we did what we had to do when we got back inside. How are you doing otherwise? I'm just cranky because of the weather. That's where I'm at. I'm an old person.
I'm an old person, but I'm not cranky because of the weather. I'm just cranky because I'm old.
That's fair.
Well, these damn kids keep playing on my lawn. I can't kick them off. I keep getting angry about them. Oh, my God.
These damn kids. Get off
my lawn.
Oh, it's brutal.
Baseball's mine now.
I am old, though, because every time I'm at the gym and there's some fucking kid on a machine texting, I'm going to kill them. I was talking to my trainer about this. We had a whole conversation. I was saying, like, I love the people at the gym I go to. They're all, like, the clientele there are very nice and normal. And, like, the men there know how to assist women without being weird or overbearing. It's a really good flow. But if I go and I'm waiting to do, like, leg extensions or whatever the fuck, and there's some kid, like, not just like between sets for like 5 fucking minutes, the dirtiest looks get shot out of my face. And now there's this whole thing where kids are wearing like Crocs to the gym. I'm like, put on some fucking gym sneakers. What are we doing? People with their shoes off, working out in their socks. I'm like, what is happening? Put on sneakers, put in your headphones, and stop texting. I'm like, I'm such an old person at the gym. Go slap these kids across the face.
I mean, there is etiquette to saying, like, if you're on a machine, you can't take up 20 minutes and only do one set. Like, that's just not proper gym etiquette. The Crocs thing, they'll learn their lesson. They won't have proper arch support. They'll hurt themselves. That's on them.
I don't want to fucking see your Crocs on a leg press ever in my life, idiots. Stop it. That's how I feel. I'm shooting off at the hip. All right? I'm over it.
You're all about those leg presses, those leg extensions. That's all you're about.
I have leg day tomorrow, and I'm dreading these kids.
What you do is go in there and squat more than them.
I'm not there yet. I'm not there yet. Some of them I can. Because I am all lower body. I am pathetically weak on my upper body. But we're going to make it happen. I'm an old person. We got Ricky Lynn in the chat. We got Greg Terry. We got Trey. Big G, Fernando. Hooks is in the chat. Scott George. Kylie was in and out. She's going to bed. But she's the best. Taylor Cannon. Thank you guys so much. Lord Kev hanging out. We got such a good crew. Such a good crew. Well, you know what? We're gonna expedite things today because it is 9 million degrees and I have SummerSlam weekend coming up and I am already tired. So we're going to jump to our commercial break. There was a little bit of news that we can talk about, I guess, too. The biggest bummer that's kind of hanging over things right now, there's some people who are out right now where I think it's like, Ospreay is tended to some overdue stuff and he'll probably be back for Forbidden Door. Kenny, I would imagine, is back by All Out unless it's more serious than disclosed, things like that. The thing that's bumming me out is Jay White is going to be out longer because I really think there's going to be a really fun program between him and Hangman. And I was kind of hoping that would be earlier in his reign. Maybe he comes back and beats Hangman at some point, but I'm intrigued by that. I'm intrigued by that. I feel bad for the dude. And the other thing is Happy Gilmore 2 is out, Ryan. I don't know if you heard.
I've watched it.
Did you like it?
I did. I mean, I liked it for what it was. If anyone went in there expecting like a classic, I honestly don't know.
It's an Adam Sandler movie, right?
Yeah, like it's an Adam Sandler Netflix movie. It's a sequel. 30 years later, it's like, there were parts of it I don't quite understand the decision they made, but overall it was, excluding bad comedies, there's two kinds of comedies to me. There's the ones where you just can't stop laughing, you're cracking up the whole time. They're obviously top tier, but there is a fun, just like comfortable comedy where like, you're getting chuckles. You're enjoying yourself. You're not. You're having a good time the entire time you watch it.
Yeah, just like a goofy, fun watch. We like a fun watch. How was Max in it? How was good old MJF?
He was good in it. He had a decent role in it.
Yeah, he had like a role, right? And Becky had a cameo, kind of more was the feel.
Yeah, Max's role was, I mean, it's not a spoiler because he's one of Adam Sandler's kids. So he had a role. Becky's is cameo-ish, like more than one, maybe just one scene if I really think about it. Yeah, she's just pure cameo. MJF's like,
he had like some lines, right?
Yes, yes.
Got it. Okay, cool. Well, I'm going to watch it. I was actually going to watch it while I was not feeling great this weekend. But then I ended up sleeping a lot. But you know what I won't sleep on is Jesse Ozog in the chat. Hi, Jesse Ozog. Sorry, Joe isn't here, and sorry for other things to do with our podcast lineup tonight. But we're going to take a commercial break. We are going to tell you about, well, we're not going to. We're going to play a commercial break that tells you about some other shows on the Shining Wizards Network. The Shining Wizards had the pop star of all pop stars, Becca, on for an interview this weekend. And Matt busted out some moves, is all I'm going to say. So you're going to want to check that out on the most recent
yes,
week.
Yes, you are. But, yes, you are.
My goodness, a time was had, but... plenty more shows here on the Shining Wizards Network. And if Ryan is ready to play the commercial break.
Well, Ryan has a process here. First, he has to go and find the overlay.
That's why I was vamping.
And he puts the overlay on. Then he has to return up the volume. Then he has to hit
play.
We'd
like to thank each and every one of you for tuning in every Monday night to listen to the Shining Wizards. If you'd like to continue to support us outside of listening, we've got a few ways for you to do that. If you shop at Amazon, go over to amazon.shiningwizards.com, do your shopping as usual, and when you make your purchase, a little bit of that purchase price will go back to support the show. If you like to wear t-shirts, merch.shiningwizards.com will take you to our Pro Wrestling Tees store, where we've got over a dozen great designs from over 11 years of professional wrestling podcasting. You can become a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/wizardspodcast, where each and every week we call out your name as one of our show producers, and the more you support us, the more things that you're entitled to receive, and believe me, they are fantastic. If you can't support us monetarily, if you don't shop at Amazon, that's absolutely fine. Continue to listen to us wherever you listen to us on the World Wide Web, and make sure you like, rate, review, subscribe, do all that good stuff. Doesn't cost you anything, helps us out, and we can continue to bring you the love fest that is the Shining Wizards.
What's up, folks? It's your boy, the Impact Player, Mr. Philly Ray, inviting all of you to check out the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast. Join us as we cover all things current in the world of pro wrestling, as well as paying homage to the old school, the squared circle. So listen in and find out why we are the recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting. Find us on all social media platforms and anywhere you get your podcast from. And as always, we are the proudest members of the Shining Wizards Network and Rant Entertainment Media.
Are you tired of being lied to every day by the mainstream media?
Do you want to know what's really going on in the world?
Do you want to make up your own mind about things, not be told what to think or say?
Then listen to Inconclusive Breakdown, a weekly anti-PC look at the world of entertainment and current events brought to you without censorship or filters.
You can find us everywhere you listen to podcasts, BitChute, and on ShiningWizardsNetwork.com.
And also, we're a proud member of the Shining Wizards Network.
Got 30 minutes to kill?
Come check out 30 Screams or Less, where we review a horror movie in 30 minutes or less. We cover new movies and old ones too.
We'll give our honest thoughts on the movie, good or shit, as well as a rating of each one that we watch.
New episodes weekly, available on the Shining Wizards Network and wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
I'm Steve.
And I'm Corey.
Come check us out at 30 Screams or Less.
G'day guys, my name is Thomas, one half of the Brocast podcast. With our podcast, we go back and watch wrestling events from WWE, WWF, WCW, ECW, AEW, and many other wrestling promotions. You can check us out on Twitter at The Brocast, that's THEBROKAST, and you can also download all episodes on Apple Podcast, CastBox, Castro, and many other podcast apps.
You like your music heavy? Then check out Radioactive Metal on the Shining Wizards Network. For over 16 years now, Radioactive Metal has been one of the longest running podcasts. Over the years, we've interviewed some legendary metal acts, had some awesome discussions and crank a hell of a lot of tunes. So join your cool Uncle Snowy and his co-host Aaron for the audio mosh pit that is radioactive metal here on the Shining Wizards Network.
Well, the action is underway!
What's up, everyone? When on the Shining Wizards Network, be sure to check out Wrestling Night in Canada. If we're not recording another kick-ass podcast,
or playing in punk bands,
or recording kick-ass heavy metal albums,
then we're sitting back, we're grabbing a couple brews, and going over everything to do in the world of pro wrestling.
Because we're from Winnipeg, you idiots.
The Mark Order Podcast is the only show you need if you're looking for dedicated coverage of everything AEW on the Shining Wizards Network. Join us live on YouTube every Wednesday night at 10:15 p.m. Eastern after Dynamite to chat along with the show. If you can't join us live, listen to us on your favorite podcast platform. Follow us on all social channels at Mark Order Pod and use the hashtag #JoinTheMarkOrder. Because if you don't find us,
we will find you.
I'm Kevin Rogue.
I'm Al Day.
And we're a couple of down under pounders that co-host Rogue Day Dots, an action figure collecting podcast where we talk about, well, just about anything that tickles our fancy at any given moment.
We're grumpy old men, and sometimes people get on our nerves. And when you get on our nerves, guess what? You get off the lawn.
Get off my lawn, asshole! We also go on a little bit of a mission. We go back and we're grading every wrestling figure line that's out there. I'm talking LJNs. I'm talking Jacks. I'm talking Hasbros. Who doesn't like a little Hulkaplex? It's a Gorilla Brain Wrestling podcast production found on the Shining Wizards Network.
I'm Duke Bags.
Kevin Rogue.
And together we are the co-hosts of your Duke and Rogue. If you want to hear about some terrible wrestling shows, we got you covered.
Well, we talk about good ones, too.
We're currently talking about the death of WCW.
I know what we're fucking talking about! Sometimes we get guest spots, like from the Taskmaster. I like to listen to the Year of Duke and Rogue podcast. They're funny guys. I like when they talk about the Narch plows. I like Narch plows. That's a good move. And I like the Dungeon of Doom. You know, sometimes I call my butt the Dungeon of Doom. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. Oklahoma.
Let me tell you a little bit about my favorite wrestling podcast. All right. It's a podcast with two men. Two men, Duke Bags, Kevin Rowe. They talk about professional wrestling. It's a man's sport. All right. And who better to talk about a man's sport than Duke? Oklahoma.
Once in a while, Vince Russo stops by.
Bro, you piece of shit! If you're not listening to the Year of Duke and Rogue podcast in the back with the boys, you piece of shit, I don't know what you're doing.
You got a slight one in there?
If you're a man, you're talking about something only a man can do. You're talking about slight one in there. Bro, take the time to slide one in there. All right, bro, you piece of shit. Slide one in there. A Gorilla Brain Wrestling podcast production that you can find on the Shining Wizards Network.
All right, we are back and we are ready to get into this episode of AEW Dynamite. So please leave a thumbs up. We see you, Jesse Ozark. We see you, Laron. We see you. I think we already shouted out Scott George, but we got more and more people filing in, hanging out with us. Thank you so much for doing that. Subscribe to our YouTube channel if you haven't already. We're closing in on 500 subscribers-ish. We're at, like, I think the 440 mark, and we did it in a lot less time than the Shining Wizards. So keep subscribing just so that we can rub it in their face. I just want to be able to rub it in their face. You know what I mean? They've worked really hard for well over a decade at this point, and I just... I want to let them know that we are getting there so much faster than they did. But let's dive into AEW. Ryan had said that it was kind of a funny layout for the show today, including a world title match, no outside interference in the middle of the show, which was a little weird. But we do open with our World Tag Team Championship Eliminator match and a full-on jobber entrance for the Bucks. This was incredible. I loved what we got with the Titantron last time, but like the talent name slide and them just getting the lack of music and everything was so, so funny. I actually really like this better than like the Bucks are broke. Like, I think being worse than broke is being on a jobber contract with a wrestling company. Like that's way worse than like the downfall. You know what I mean? Than like,
yeah,
the beat out on the streets or whatever they did with Baron Corbin. So it's so fun. And it was like a lot of the EVP stuff was so silly. And then it was like, okay, well, what's the follow-up now that they're not EVP? It's like, this has been good. I would like to see this version of the Outrunners on a consistent basis that we've gotten against FTR, that we've gotten against the Young Bucks. This match was very, very good. The Young Bucks win in over 14 minutes. The TK driver seals it. I don't know if that's what we're still calling it, but this was very, very fun. The Outrunners in their Newport gear again, getting the full entrance. But this was like a nice competitive matchup. Like I like when the Outrunners put on their working boots. My complaints with them are when it's like the same thing that we always get. But this was good. The Bucks still being underhanded, getting a low blow and a roll up to survive the Outrunners. And then Okada joins the Bucks for a post-match beatdown, but Swerve comes out to make the save. Certainly feels like it's blood and gut season, Ryan. Certainly feels like we're headed to one of those. And it seems like we're getting that on the women's side. We're going to talk about that in a little bit, but this was all sorts of fun. I like seeing tag wrestling starting to rebuild on AEW. I had done a video on my own channel that was talking about the three things I felt like they needed to do coming out of the pay-per-view. And two of the three were, we got to get the tag title on track and we have to have a plan for Athena. Feels like somebody was listening because we're in a good spot with those. The third one was Hangman's got to win, which I think was the most obvious, but there's still things I would like to see. Like I would like to see a properly packaged GYV in the mix. I would like to see more from the tag team division, but like the Outrunners actually working to their potential, I feel like is a good start, Ryan.
So, a couple things. One, they got below a jobber's entrance because their graphic was just talent and at socials.
Like that's an enhancement talent, basically. Like they don't even announce them on TV half the time, right?
And whoever they couldn't even bother to give them graphics, like put their name on there.
Yeah, that was so very funny. I like that they're having fun with that stuff again. It makes it feel like the Muppets when they're having fun with the vehicle that the show's being delivered
it's
in.
It's time to light the lights. It's to go on the Muppet Show tonight. Yeah, I agree. That's when it's fun. You're right. This is probably the best version of the Outrunners we've had, where they're both still silly but serious enough that you can believe in them as a team. Because teams like the Outrunners always run the risk of they walk a fine line between being too comedic and still being able to be taken seriously. And this, you know, like Orange Cassidy is a great example. Orange Cassidy's hilarious, but you take him seriously in his matches because in the matches he gets serious. For a while there, the Outrunners weren't really getting serious. They were just still doing their silly gimmicks in the match. And now they still do them, but they have a whole match around it. So
yeah. That's what I had always liked about what we saw out of MXM in AEW and in ROH. It's the Orange Cassidy thing of like, don't let the fact that they're really fun and silly distract you from the fact that they can work. We weren't getting the work rate side with the Outrunners. We were getting the fun But it was, they were wrestling to their gimmick, which is late 80s, early 90s. Very formulaic in that time, right? So I like that they've kind of picked that up with the FTR stuff and with this. That makes me happy to see. And Okada and Swerve still on opposite side of things here. Let's talk about that real quick. A couple weeks ago, we got Swerve coming out to challenge Okada. The pictures of Okada alone with the title, having dropped the silly bitchness of it all, moving back to this more serious presentation, we're away from the blonde hair even. This is the Okada that a lot of people were waiting for. This is who they signed. But I love that Swerve is on the other side of this, because the reports were like, hey, you know, this is not going to be like a mid-card title. This is going to be a 1A and 1B title, probably anchoring, I'm assuming, anchoring Collision most times. So starting it off with the most legendary wrestler in New Japan history, or one of, certainly of the more modern years. And Swerve, like the foil to Hangman and one of the most important stars in the company, I feel like is a really good call. I haven't been on stream with you in the past couple of weeks, so I haven't gotten to talk to you about this, Ryan, or talk to this with you, Ryan, about this. How are you feeling about Swerve versus Okada? I'm like very pumped up for that.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be awesome, and it's already a cool feud. I like the logic in there that Okada was mad that Swerve basically took the EVP titles from his friends, the Bucks, which fundamentally not only changed his friends' lives, but changed his, because now he can't use their power for his own sake. So there's a lot of logic there. It's just going to be a fun match, and they're two of the best going at it. I think
they're going to beat the fuck out of each other.
Yes.
I very much look forward to that part.
I think for a while there, Okada's run felt, I guess, disappointing. It was kind of like, what were they doing with him? And in the last, this year, we'll just say this year, they've picked it back up, and now it's, you feel like it's Okada again, and he's doing something, because going from Kenny to Swerve is like, they're just keeping him with, I mean, I know Okada himself is at that level, but they're keeping him with guys that level and just putting him in good feud after good feud. So I'm real pumped about this. I'm also pumped because Swerve is so different than like Kenny is.
Yes.
So it's a totally different style feud for Okada, which I really appreciate.
I like that too. I think it's going to be a challenge because it's a very Americanized feud in a way. Like I feel like Swerve is incredibly versatile and in that he can wrestle anyone, but he's like an American TV wrestler. I feel like Swerve is, and that's going to pull out a different side of Okada than we've seen in a lot of ways. And I agree with you. I feel like Okada got lost when the product got lost, which is funny, because when he came over in this role, it was like, oh my God, Okada's showing up as a heel. And then it was like, oh my God, Okada has this comedic side to him. And when his title reign got lost, it was kind of like at the same time the entire product fell off track. Now it feels like the product's on track and we're getting the Okada that like a lot of us have been salivating for. So I'm excited for that as well. Let's talk about this Christian promo, because everybody's talking about this this concerto, double concerto thing that was unfortunately filmed from the wrong angle. But we get this very kind of emotionally twisted up promo where I kind of like that this is like a bit of a confessional, but also Michael Scott boom roasted style thing where he disowns Nick Wayne after this very dramatic monologue about betrayal and legacy. And when you think it's done, Mama Wayne and Kip distract him so that Nick can hit a title belt concerto on Cage. The crowd erupts into fuck Nick Wayne chants. Love that Nick Wayne is getting the heat off of this. Love that Christian isn't pretending he's suddenly a good guy. Christian is an asshole. He's basically said so, right, in this promo. He made some scathing remarks about Mother Wayne and what I can only refer to as her cavernous vagina. So I actually really, really liked this because I didn't want it to just be like Nick Wayne turned on Christian and now he's a saint. No, he's still an asshole. And we're still going to have to do the creative work with Adam Edge Copeland to get him over to the good side, basically. So I like that this isn't like Nick Wayne turned further heel and that made Christian good. These are still not great people. But Nick Wayne getting a ton of heat off of it, that feels like, thank God, because this went on for a very long time. I'm glad it was worth the wait. I'm glad it's productive for Nick Wayne. I liked it. How did you feel about it? This was a little bit polarizing because I think people were just fixated on the production gaffe of that concerto situation, unfortunately.
So I won't address the comments to Mrs. Wayne. I think you've covered them quite thoroughly with just one line.
Cavernous vagina.
I will say this is a very... They're trying something here, and I'm very curious to see how it plays out, because typical wrestling storyline, and I'm not insulting the typical wrestling storyline, it's one I highly enjoy, would have been he goes away for a little bit longer, he goes on a soul search, maybe we get a couple vignettes, or we get a, like, I haven't been here in 2 months, and truthfully, you know, I'm a different, I saw what happened, but instead he comes back, it's like, no, I'm an asshole, which is unique, you don't usually get that. Because you know where they want to go. They're going to Edge and Christian. And I know it's Copeland, but essentially...
they're doing an Edge and Christian last run feeling type thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so to not have it go with Christian just instantly going, good guy. Which makes me believe... Because, I mean, Copeland's an asshole when in wrestling theory. Like, he's done some bastard things. Because, you know, if you're willing to take his WWE run into it as well. So there is a world in which... Copeland could come and be like, yeah, I know you're an asshole. We were both assholes, but like you were the wrong kind or something. Like there's a way to walk that through. Obviously, I think the concerto is done to take him off TV for a little bit, to give time for that. Cause he didn't, you know, he stood up at the end of the pay-per-view. Now he didn't stand up. So I think it's time to give a little bit of that soul searching. Really good for Nick Wayne. Really good to let him have the moment of getting out from under Christian, but not forcing a face turn that might not have worked. Like,
yeah, I think the other thing is too, like, it feels like we're headed into a program with FTR. That has to be it, right? Because we got this rated FTR thing. And they're firmly heels. And again, we have Forbidden Door and then All Out. And I don't think anyone's like, man, what is Christian Cage doing at Forbidden Door? You know what I mean? So your idea of like, let's pull him off TV, I think is a good one. And then you can do some redemption stuff with Copeland kind of like pulling him back enough to the face side that it makes sense that they face FTR. It doesn't have to be a baby face. It can be a goofy like, this is an asshole, but he's my guy and he's been my guy for this long kind of thing. But like, that's what's so unique about we have this pay-per-view that's an all-star game and then we go back into regular programming is interesting because I don't think anyone's like, oh man, Adam Copeland versus Tsuji.
I was letting you go on that one. I don't have a New Japan guy I could reference, so I was letting you take it.
Yeah, like, I don't think anyone's, like, looking to see Adam Copeland versus Oiwa or whatever. Like, it's not something that people are clamoring for. So, like, clear that out. You know what I mean? And give some breathing room. It's just a little awkward because it feels like this whole storyline has been delayed. But they pulled the trigger on the part that they needed to, which was getting Nick Wayne some heel out of this. So, heel out of this, which is good. Which is good. Well, this was a little confusing, but a hell of a fucking match. I gotta say, Hangman and Moxley, ring-wise, just don't disappoint. Like, this was a no outside interference match. I assumed we were getting the big angle at the end of the show because of that. I initially was like, it felt like we were waiting so long for Jon Moxley to lose the title that I don't need to see him have a rematch. Unless the Death Riders are going to hardcore break up. But once the bell rang, I loved this. This was a savage title defense. This was brutal. And I love that it wasn't like, oh my God, so much bleeding brutal. It was just beating the fuck out of each other brutal. And honestly, for me, I prefer that style match more. But we get a gotch pile driver in this. Nasty, nasty, nasty stuff. We get the Deadeye through the announce table. Darby coming in like a flying squirrel from the balcony. You know, the past couple weeks that Darby Allin was back, he was like, I'm just standing here and not jumping off of anything. I'm devastated. So they gave him this one. But after interference from the Blackpool Combat Club is neutralized and Marina Shafir is ejected, Hangman hits two buckshot lariats. It finishes with a Deadeye. Those buckshot lariats lariated Nigel McGuinness style. That was nuts. And what's crazy is they beat the hell out of each other for this whole match. It was 26 minutes. And it was, I mean, hard hitting from beginning to end, man. Like, that was wrestling, bro. That was rough. So I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued to see it. I just want the Death Riders to end. But post-match, MJF comes out. He confronts Hangman Page. And you're not going to believe this, but they exchanged words, and some of them weren't very nice, Ryan. Your thoughts on this match and the post-match?
Lord Kev made a comment in chat that I'm agreeing with. No interference match with interference brought it down for him. And it kind of, not fully, but it definitely was a knock against it for me. Though I saw it coming because it's literally the most standard wrestling thing in the world, which is, all right, no one outside interference. And then boom, outside interference. It happens in, like, it's almost cliche at this point that they called us knowing there's going to be outside. I hate it. It is like.
The only way there wasn't going to be was if the show ended with Mox dejected backstage and then beating the fuck out of him, or post-match the rest of the Death Riders turn on him. But they're not going to do that in the middle of the show. So, of course, there was going to be interference.
Or you could have had them coming to the ring through the audience, getting distracted, and Darby doing his thing before they ever got there.
Yeah, that's true.
Which would, because there is a limit where you could say, because logic would say that who's ever in charge of, whoever in kayfabe is in charge of the booking decision just goes, if you interfere in the match, the person you interfere, like Death Riders, if you interfere, no matter who you hit, because there's always Moxley's disqualified or whatever, like there's ways to do that. So, but otherwise it was more my preferred style match. I'm not into the overly gory matches. I like the more hard hitting, but standard match. So I really enjoyed it. The fact that it was in the middle of the show was just ridiculous to me. I was like, what are they doing? But I don't mind it. It was something different. Gives you a reason. I guess there's a theory to give you a reason to watch all hours of Dynamite because you don't know when the certain matches will take place. But the real story here now is that Hangman can beat Mox, not just in a Texas Death Match. He can beat him in a match. Like, that's, I think, the story they were trying to tell there is, like, Hangman can beat him no matter what way it is. And I think this was truly the transition from Hangman and Mox to Darby and the Death Riders, which I fully am okay with.
I think so too. It's very, I don't know if something's going on with Claudio, but the fact that he faced Wheeler and Mox and not Claudio, it intrigues me. Like, I don't know if, like, maybe he's just banged up and they didn't want to do it. But Claudio lost to Mark Briscoe at the end of last week's Dynamite, and nobody came out to help him. So I'm wondering, does Claudio turn on Mox? Is this the framework for an Eddie Kingston return? I'm always going to be asking that. But, like, logically, if the Death Riders turn on Mox and Eddie Kingston is there for him, or vice versa, if he aligns with his longest running rival and Claudio to fuck Mox over, like, holy shit, right? So There's a lot of interesting possibilities if Eddie's ready to go. That's a big if. Like, everybody keeps saying, like, they've been doing it with Dragunov. They did it with Charlotte. Eddie's in his 40s, and it was really, really nasty in both knees, man. So he's going to take his time, but we're now, like, at over the year mark, I think. So he's probably got to be ready soon, I would think.
The funny thing here is I was, as you were proposing different solutions, I thought to myself, well, I mean, the only problem is it's hard to bring Eddie back as a heel because fans are just going to lose their goddamn mind. So whatever way you bring him back, it's yeah. So I thought, well, how do you make Mox a face at this point because of all the stuff he's done? But I think I hate to say it, go think of the other company because it's a very similar storyline. Roman Reigns.
Sure.
He somehow became heel almost within like with one betrayal. He was instantly heat like face. I mean, so like it's very possible if you do the turn properly. And you can feel like do
the
it.
AEW audience though would feel like I don't think it would work because they are more nuanced with stuff.
There,
like
but there's also
Roman Reigns is still a fucking heel. He's just getting crowd reactions, but his behavior, he's like gaslighting Paul Heyman. Like he's not a good guy. But I do think honestly, Moxley works better, in my opinion. I think Moxley works better as a face, and I think you could very easily have a story arc that is, I really thought I was doing the best thing for AEW, and I lost sight of it. It's like a very easy thing for Jon Moxley. Well,
this
the
is
type
where,
of promos he cuts to pull
this
off.
This is where this is where Eddie Kingston being out for the year actually comes in handy. Because he has not been around from pretty much almost all of this, close to almost all of this Mox stuff. So you can play the return of Eddie Kingston coming to be like, what the hell is wrong with you? As a impetus to change.
Sure.
Versus if he had been around for the whole year, why does Eddie's opinion suddenly matter to Mox? Like there's a way to do it.
Yeah. Mox being the one to get him to put his head on straight would be great. And then like, who is he on the other side? Like, are you kidding me? Eddie Kingston and heel Wheeler Yuta, the things that could do for Wheeler Yuta, honest to God. And then Claudio and him are still mortal enemies. It's perfect. It's perfect. But let's keep rocking along. You guys are in the chat hanging out with us. We appreciate you. 1LT Photos hanging out with us, acknowledging Jesse Ozog as people should. But we get this ROH-AEW crossover situation. We get Athena and Billy Starks against Toni Storm and Alex Windsor, who I love made the choice to match Toni Storm's freak a lot. Not, I mean, Toni Storm's freak is pretty out there. I shouldn't put it that way. But like, Alex Windsor, if you've seen any of her matches, she's not this type of character. But she was very playful with Toni in this match, and it was very, very fun. Billy Starks came out with her fucking Billy Starks said, "I want to be in Blood and Guts, man." Billy Starks is here for it. But this was I really like what they have brewing in the women's division. I really, really do. I'm intrigued to see what happens when Mercedes comes back. But it sure feels like we're building to women's Blood and Guts, but this particular match to help move that along, really fun. I love Toni and Alex doing their synchronized dancing corner kicks. That was very cute. Athena winning with the O face after tagging behind Toni Storm's back. Athena looked phenomenal in this. Like she's really connecting with the crowd, which, like it feels like her move to the AEW main roster is overdue, but it's not like so overdue that the momentum fell off a cliff. It did on the ROH product for sure, but fans have been salivating for her. And now that she's finally here, like this is a program people are interested in. I want to see Toni Storm drop the title to Athena. I think there's so many interesting things about that. And I said this going into the pay-per-view, one of the things that's most interesting to me about it is her winning the title that Mercedes couldn't is like a very, very interesting possibility of Athena wins, Mercedes has her downfall, and then maybe a face Mercedes facing heel Athena is able to dethrone Athena for that title. Oh, I would love that as a long-term story. That's so interesting to me. But they never do stuff like this, and I would love for them to do stuff like this. Have Athena just show up, beat Toni Storm, be the megastar that we've already seen her be in ROH, but for the 12 people and me that have been watching that program, we already know that. Let the AEW audience see that, because she looks great. She's in phenomenal shape as well. Like, her conditioning is something that people haven't really been talking about as much, but she's moving with even more ease, but still keeping her power. I love it.
So you said a lot there, so I'm trying to decide where I want to start.
Start with the match.
With Alex Windsor.
Windsor.
No, you're right. She did kind of adapt a little bit to Toni Storm's way. Not completely, but enough. Billy Starks is playing such a funny role in this to me, because, like, you watch her whole ROH story, and she's been away from Athena as almost as much as she's been with Athena. Like, I don't know what her character trajectory is, and I don't actually care. Not in a negative way, just being in, like, a, she's fun. Like, she has silly personality. She's a great wrestler. So, like, I don't really, they do need to fix it, but, like, not right now. Especially because they do treat ROH and AEW so differently that it's kind of like, this is new to the AEW, you know, audience, even though it shouldn't be. This has been going on for how long? Match was really good. I think it says a lot for Alex Windsor that she's in this match, and then the match is so good. And I think they're trying to introduce her in a way to, without putting her in the traditional, she's going to challenge for the title position. They put her in a way to be like, hey, she's good. So she is someone you should keep your eye on, which I think is doing her a lot of favors. But they do appear to be prepping for Blood and Guts. I'm okay with that. I want some Blood and Guts women. I think Billy Starks will steal that match is what I really think will happen.
Genuinely watching this today, like we talked about this a little bit last week, Joe and I were on the show where we only said nice things about you. Billy's like kind of a contradictory amalgamation of things, and that she will bring the fight to you, and she has a solid wrestling base, but she also has this backyard style to her that is like very endearing, and her personality is so much fun, but she could also turn the screws to be more serious when she needs to. Like, there's so many fun things, but yeah, I think she would fuck some shit up in a Blood and Guts match. And one thing that I'm loving about Alex Windsor, I saw a lot of people saying, like, oh, who is, in good faith, not being like, who is this? Like, genuinely being like, who is this? And I saw a lot of people saying, oh, that's Will Ospreay's girl, and she's in the British scene and whatever. And then after Saturday with her match with Athena, I saw a lot less of that. I saw a lot of, like, this person is awesome. And I just loved how quickly she established herself as her own wrestler on AEW, so that they didn't fall into that trap. Probably helps that Will had to go away too for the next next 6 weeks or so. But like, I think that collision match with Athena showed some people, because they had one for ROH Global Wars in Australia. The one on Collision was better. It was just like there was a little more familiarity there, but. And she bumped what LT Photo say. Yeah, there was this was really fun. And I of course still want more screen time, but like the things that they're doing with their screen time are so much better, so much cleaner, so much more consistent. I like it. Well, we have MJF getting kicked out of the Hurt Syndicate by Shelton Benjamin, with some comedic, but a biting backstage segment nonetheless. A lot of people were saying this feels abrupt, and I somewhat agree, but we do have this like main character syndrome thing with Max right now, where he's feuding with Mark Briscoe, he's feuding with the Hurt Syndicate, he's feuding with Heyman, he's feuding with Mystico. So I'm like, yes, this feels like a sharp turn, but at the same time, we got to get some shit into gear. Like, and I think Max is probably going to get cost the title by the Hurt Syndicate, and I think he loses to Mark Briscoe because of the Hurt Syndicate, and then he just loses his fucking mind, which I am here for that version of MJF 100%. So I think it's all going to come together, but a lot of people are saying this feels like an abrupt turn. And I don't disagree, but I'm like, yeah, but I'm also still also ready to get the show on the road. How'd you feel about MJF officially being kicked out of the Hurt Syndicate?
So it is abrupt. I will say that it, like, they went from 0 to 60 right off the line. I'm like, you know, for something I want, I wanted him out of the Hurt Syndicate because I don't think it was doing anyone any favor. I think it was fun. It was a fun storyline, but it was one that didn't have, in my opinion, a lot of staying power. I think it would end up hurting pretty much everyone involved because he's, you know, he is the main character, and Bobby Lashley and Shelton should be, don't deserve to be overshadowed in that. But they didn't do a lot to set this up. They didn't even do like dirty looks. I would have even been okay with like a couple weeks of dirty looks.
There was a little bit of dissension the past couple weeks. Like there was definitely Bobby Lashley getting jealous that Max was getting a title shot. And there was definitely Bobby Lashley being like, we're not stooges for you, man. Like there was some of that, but abrupt nonetheless. There could have been more of that for sure.
Yeah. So I'm not, it is abrupt, but I'm okay with it because it is eventually what I wanted. It's just going to be interesting to see how MJF handles it. Do they just totally throw away, walk away? The biggest waste would be to totally walk away from that storyline.
I think there was, to me, a creative cat and mouse game of, is MJF going to cost them the tag titles or are they going to cost MJF? Because MJF has to be such an irredeemable piece of shit that doesn't make him the face in this situation, which I think is why it's gotten so personal with him and Mark. So I think if he didn't cost them the tag titles at All In, they've got to be costing him. And we'll talk more. Fuck it. Let's talk about it now. We do have Ricochet versus Mark Briscoe. We'll talk about the match in a second, but because we're talking about Max and Mark, Briscoe cuts this passionate promo invoking his brother. And calling out MJF, and MJF appears on screen and he does the sneak attack low blow gimmick, which is very standard, but I will say the timing of it was very well done. Like it wasn't, Mark wasn't like, where, what's going on? Look at me. Look at the Titantron. Like it happened quick enough. And I feel like there was a story beat in here that was good of like, MJF was like, I don't fucking need backup. I'll be in two places at once myself. I don't give a shit. I thought that was a clever storytelling piece. But Hangman comes out to even the odds. And we get Briscoe and MJF announced for the main event of next week. I feel like I'm a little split on this because I feel like Mark Briscoe has other human attributes than being Jay's brother. I also feel like MJF had to make this insanely personal so that when the Hurt Syndicate cost him, he is still the bad guy or one of the bad guys in all of this. So I think he had to turn the screws really hard on this. And I also think genuinely, like there were reports that this was a really important program to MJF. And I know that he holds the Briscoes in very high regard. So I think this is like them telling that story properly on AEW television, where the Chris Jericho reference felt so unearned when they did it for the ROH title. So I don't mind it because this is kind of the first real time that they're telling that. Like Mark Briscoe's just been like a tournament loser who everybody loves for a really long time. This is a program. So there's a lot with it. But after this, I would like for Mark Briscoe to have other attributes to him, like than being silly and also Jay Briscoe's brother. That makes sense.
Correct. So I did like the promo from Mark Briscoe. Basically, I didn't know where it was going when he said, like, I don't think I'll see my brother again. He's like, I'm like, where are we going with this? And then to be like, because if I kill you.
Yeah. That was a cute, that was well done from Mark.
I have a question, but let me get to my, I guess I'll go to my thing. The only thing I don't like is that Ricochet is the one sacrificed on the altar of this quick Mark Briscoe loss. Because, you know, I don't see him winning. So like, Now, I could be wrong. If I end up being wrong, I'm okay with it. But otherwise, I don't. I know that Ricochet has a win on him, so I guess you could say it's 1-1, but I still don't like it. Oh, no, it's 2-1 because Briscoe has a win over Ricochet already. But either way, I don't like that. My question is, you think MJF's going to cost the tag titles and they're not going to cost MJF a match?
No, I think if MJF was going to cost them the tag titles, that would have happened at All In. So now I'm of the opinion that I think the Hurt Syndicate cost him the world title against Hangman, and I think they cost him the match against Mark. And I think that's how this gets very like.
But even though MJF, in theory, is the one who's been wronged by being kicked out, you don't see him going to get revenge?
Maybe after, but I think they cost him twice before that happens. Because I feel like to do all of this to beat Mark Briscoe makes no sense, and no way in hell he's beating Hangman. Like, that just ain't happening.
Yeah, that's fair. So,
I think this is such a textbook. I keep saying it feels like Dusty and Flair to me. This is such a classic, like, rich douchebag heel asshole versus lovable everyman hard times feeling version of Mark Briscoe, that you got to just have the face prevail at the end of all this. I agree with you about Ricochet. Well, let's talk about that now. There's not much left to talk about, actually. We've been motoring through this pretty well. So we'll talk about Ricochet and Mark Briscoe. This was really fun. Gates of Agony, and what are they calling Brody? Brodito. Brody King and Bandito getting involved.
Brodito, it's great.
It's fantastic. I love it. Shit gets gritty in there, but Jay Driller hit for the win for Mark Briscoe. I feel like Mark Briscoe has enough conglomerates that I'm not sure why these guys... I guess not, though, because Orange Cassidy's out. And Kyle O'Reilly's having an identity crisis about where he's at. So maybe he doesn't have the conglomeration backup. I take that back. And honestly, if you want anybody in your corner, isn't it Brodito? I mean, come on. So I'm not mad about that. But we also need to get trios feuds going. So if you're going to give me, after MJF and Mark Briscoe, Ricochet and Gates of Agony versus Mark Briscoe and Brodito, I'm not mad about that either, because Brody needs to get out of track too. So I'm not mad about this. Like, if you want to run that back as a trios program, I'm here for it. But what do you think of what ended up being our main event match here?
So the match itself was fine. I those two have good chemistry. Ricochet is awesome, so he sells really well to Mark Briscoe's kind of crazy style of wrestling. The only thing I'm going to say is again, what are you doing with Ricochet? I guess is my like, I thought they were trying to build him up again, and this feels like a step down. Now, at the same point, you're talking about Brodito. They are the perfect counter to the Gates of Agony, because Brody's huge. And Bandito, while not quite as big, is a muscular man. So, like, there's enough size there to feel like, hey, that's a good counter. I don't know what they're doing with Ricochet and that kind of, you know, I don't think this was a good loss for him.
I'm okay with him taking a singles loss to Mark Briscoe if it means if the story beat is it's because I need backup from Gates of Agony. I need to be in a proper trio, and then they go and win trios titles. Like, them versus the Ops is something I want to see. But I agree with you that, like, Ricochet needs to be made to feel important. But if the thing is, like, I need to be in a proper trio, not a singles guy with some backup, That could get fun. That could get fun, but I understand what you're saying too. It's very tricky because they're trying to elevate Mark Briscoe, but he's been such a lovable loser from a wins and losses perspective that the way to do that is to have him beat some top talent. But in that process, it always feels like somebody that does nothing but lose is now beating guys that have done nothing but win. So it gets a little tricky.
You know, part of the problem is too, like, there was no in-between matches, it felt like.
Yes, it was like a flip of the switch, yeah.
Yes.
I agree with that. I agree with that. But that was it, man. That's our episode of Dynamite. They really feel like they've found their groove with these four match 2 hour cards. Two hours and 15 minutes.
Stella has got her groove back.
It's true. It's true. But I skipped over the most important segment on the show, which is Willow Nightingale saying that she's a trapezoid of Grapezoid.
I appreciate about Willow is she struggled at first to say trapezoid, which I get. She's hyped. But because she's so good, it actually felt like natural. Like I'm creating it at the moment. And so like I struggle at first until I get there. She's just so good.
She's just the most lovable person. She like kind of had trouble getting it out. Like every human has trouble getting words out of their mouth. And like she's impossible not to love this woman. But we're getting Willow and Tekla on Collision. And she's going after this new creepy triangle, which I love. This Tekla, Sky Blue, and Julia Hart trio feels like we're building to Women's Blood and Guts. I hope they don't do them in the same episode. I'll just say that. I can't imagine they would. But also that means you're bringing two rings to multiple locations. So we'll see. We'll see how these spelled out. But a good Dynamite tonight and an uncharacteristically short episode for us. This is what happens when we dive right in and we only have two people and it's an easy card.
And you're hot and you have SummerSlam this weekend.
And that also helps. That also helps. But honestly, like when I was looking at my recap here, I'm like, yeah, it's mostly matches. There wasn't like a ton of backstages and the MJF through line was manageably short. You know, it wasn't like there was any 10-minute promo that we had to talk about here. Like this was an easy one to talk about because it was very in-ring heavy. I'm looking at the match times and I'm like, the tag match opener was 14 minutes. The world title match was 26. That's you throwing commercial breaks. That's like an hour 20 of your time right there. So it was a fun episode. Whenever AEW is focused on their in-ring, it's at minimum a very easy watch. Even Ricochet versus Briscoe was 13:50. My God, these were the women had 11:20. Of course, it was the shortest match, but like nothing under 10 minutes with four matches, and one of your matches is 26-minute world title match in the middle of the show. Like there's just not a lot of backstages to be talking about because they ate up all their TV time with in-ring. So no complaints from me. I love me some in-ring wrestling. And I see Timothy Drake. I see me Normus in the chat. They're probably like, oh, they're just getting around to Dynamite because we're about an hour in. But we're wrapping up over here. But this episode, very shortly, will be history.
I was waiting.
I'm here for it. I'm here for it. I'm here for history. So I'm going to trademark that. And if anybody else tries to use that title, I'm going to stomp them out of my life.
I want. So now that I know, since I know someone who happens to use the title, I want to see you try.
Oh, okay. Who uses that title?
I screwed up. I'm just going to go. it was supposed to be a rogue. I can't even say it. Roguishly handsome man. That's okay. What it was supposed to say. And I butchered my own words. I'm done. It's me. You can follow me. First of all, follow me on all our socials.
At what Mark a swerve Pod. It was Ryan all along.
I'm like M. Night Shyamalan. I have such a twist. So first, follow me on all our socials at Mark Order Pod. Then follow my history blog hereforhistory.com @_hereforhistory or @hereforhistory, depending on the social. I missed this month, had a lot going on. Summer's tough, but I will be back and I have some things in the pipeline that should work out pretty well. Now, Kate, when you're not here and you don't want to be sweet, where can people find you being super sour?
I don't do any other wrestling podcasts, so I don't know what you're referring to. You can catch me being sour every Tuesday and also Mondays on Fightful Select talking about Raw. Fightful YouTube on Tuesdays. Wednesdays, I'm here. Thursdays, I'm napping. Fridays, I'm talking SmackDown. This weekend, I will be at Night 1 of SummerSlam, and I'll be doing some other stuff on the WWE circuit. Going to try and get to a Boys and Girls Club event tomorrow, which I'm looking forward to, and helping Sean with press, which to my understanding means I press a button that records things, and then I press that same button to make it stop recording things. And if it's more complicated than that, Sean Ross app is in trouble. So
God, I really hope you don't forget to press the button.
Yeah,
especially I hope you don't. I mean, I hope you do, but
it's just rude.
Yeah.
Anyway. That's all for the Mark Order podcast today. Buy our t-shirt.
Be so sad now.
Buy our t-shirt on Pro Wrestling Tees. Let's close the show. Ryan was mean. I was so nice to you when you weren't here last week. I don't know why.
Literally, the minute I was able to watch was you guys insulting me. I came in on you guys.
Oh no, Ryan, you're breaking up. I don't know what you're talking about.
Guys, she's right here. I don't know what that was about.
Oh no, I don't know either. What happened? My internet. Oh, my quirky little internet. So tricky. We are going to wrap it up here at the Mark Order Podcast. For realsies, though, you know the deal with our t-shirts. We're going to tell you to go to Pro Wrestling Tees. I'm sure there's going to be some back to school sale where you can save 20%, which will negate your shipping, and you can buy our beautiful t-shirts that look like our background. So if you're like, God, I love the background of the Mark Order Podcast, I wish I could wear it. Well, you're in luck. Pro Wrestling Tees. Mark Order Podcast store. We're going to get out of here. We will see you next Wednesday. Thank you for watching. Goodbye. And good night. Enjoy the G1.
I put the outro over thing. Then I got to go down. I got to make sure the volume is where it should be. And then I hit outro.
The Mark Order Podcast. We now return you to your regularly scheduled